There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back, second hour of The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti up here on the rooftop garden. Beautiful breeze blowing across and a nice evening of sport to look forward to. Let's start you off with the live sport. Let's go to the football first and foremost. Chris McCarty's watching the Premier League game for us.
Yeah, I'll start right there. Bet365, Stoke against Crystal Palace. Not much to report. We're just watching pictures of fans. They're bored to tears. I'm bored a little bit as well watching this one, Tom. It's not a great game to kick things off today. Normally, we get plenty of goals in our lunchtime kickoffs, but not today thus far. 35 minutes on the clock. It remains Stoke 0, Crystal Palace 0. No real chances to tell you about either. It's been a midfield stramash, if I can use that word. Both teams trying to get a foothold in the game. Not quite working thus far. Stoke 0, Crystal Palace 0. Where we do have a goal is in Scotland. It is a barnstorming. Forget the old firm. Forget Celtic Rangers. This is the game for everyone. Dundee versus Hamilton and Academical. It means nothing. Both teams will stay in the division, I'm sure. Hamilton, although are a little closer to the bottom than Dundee, but Dundee lead. It is the left back. It means no relevance to anyone. Anyone that's interested in this, text us in on 4001. But it is Kevin Holt who has scored. It's Dundee 1, Hamilton 0.
Or, if you're interested to know what's going on in Spain as well, because there's an early kickoff there.
If anyone cares about this game as well, 4001.
Please, if there's any Eibar fans out there, get in touch with the show. Or better still, come on down here and we will lobby the Barasti team to get it on the big screen, because it's Girona against Eibar. And don't you quaff at it, my friend. There's two goals there at the moment, and they're going to the visiting side. Eibar lead by 2-0 into half-time. Other ones in the rugby, world of rugby. Blues have come up from behind in the last few moments of the game to beat the Waratahs. So a good result there for the South African franchise, beating the Waratahs at home. We're getting ready for Stormers against Bulls. That one kicks off at 5.05 this afternoon, live here in Dubai. What's happening in the tennis?
Yeah, we got a lot of matches going on today. Most notable ones are over in Munich, Germany. Right now, Hyung Chung from South Korea going against Alexander Zverev. He is up 3-1, so the South Korean up on the German right now. Elsewhere across the world in tennis, Istanbul's going to be kicking off. That's going to be going off. They're going to be starting the serves here around 10 o'clock tonight. Terry O'Daniel going against Jeremy Chardy in that one. Elsewhere in the tennis, Coco Vandeweghe, the 12 seed, taking on Kristina Milanovic. And that is the Madrid Open. Julia Gorges going against Timo Babos. And Caroline Garcia has defeated Dominic Chublova. Good work there on that name, Roscoe. 6-1 and 3-4 right now. She had to retire in the second set. And elsewhere, Kiki Bertens is taking on Maria Sarka. That'll kick off at around 8 o'clock tonight. First serve at 8 o'clock tonight, Tom. And if you ask Miss Venus Williams if her sister will be playing in the French Open, Venus says yes. But Serena has not come out yet and said if she's going to be playing or not. We'll see.
Get some cricket scores for you. It's finished in the, well, the RCB innings has finished in the live game in the Indian Premier League at the moment, where RCB are taking on Chennai Super Kings. RCB finished with 127 for a loss of 9 wickets from their 20 overs. So that means that Chennai need 128 to win. Sunriders taking on Delhi Daredevils a little later on. Surrey are playing Worcestershire over in Division 1 County Championship. Surrey, of course, who announced over the last day or so that they've signed Virat Kohli for a month in the lead-up to the India series against England. Surrey are 377 for 6 at lunch against Worcestershire. Notts are taking on Hampshire at the moment. Hampshire trail Nottinghamshire by 148 runs with 4 wickets remaining. Lancs trail Somerset by 428 runs with 10 wickets remaining. And Yorkshire lead Essex by 168 runs with 7 wickets remaining. Joe Root in action in that game as we speak. To the tour match where Northants taking on Pakistan. Northants got 259 and bowled out for 259. Pakistan now trail Northamptonshire by 178 runs with 8 wickets remaining. Pakistan are 81-42. Let's go back to some of the big talking points of the day or of the last few days. Chris McCarty, we had a draw here yesterday at the Armani. This is for the Asia Cup, which is taking place in the UAE.
It is, yes. January of next year, the Asian Cup. There will be all the big nations from around Asia that will be descending upon the UAE. Matches not only in Abu Dhabi, Dubai, throughout the Emirates as well. Really looking forward to this. And yes, there was a glitzy ceremony down at the Armani Hotel at the Burj Khalifa last night to draw the teams out of the hat for next year's Asian Cup. Of course, Australia, the defending champions, they won it back in 2015 on home soil. Can the UAE repeat what Australia done on their own path? And, well, listen, they've got a pretty straightforward group, I would say. Group A, the UAE will take on Thailand, India and Bahrain. Group B, Australia, they'll take on Syria. That, of course, a rematch of their World Cup playoff recently, which Australia won. They'll also be joined by Palestine and Jordan. Group C, South Korea, China, Kyrgyz Republic and the Philippines as well, making it into the Asian Cup, which is great for the Filipino community right here in the UAE. Group D, Iran, Iraq, Vietnam and Yemen. Group E, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Lebanon and North Korea. And then Group F, Japan, Uzbekistan, Oman and Turkmenistan. So it all gets underway in January. It follows hot on the heels of the FIFA Club World Cup, which is down in Abu Dhabi, December 12th to the 22nd, if memory serves me correct. And we're guaranteed that it will either be one of the teams here will be Real Madrid or Liverpool. So expect those tickets to sell out quickly for that. And then we bounce in to the Asian Cup. It all gets underway in January.
Good to have those teams heading to town. Another question that I have to pose to you. I wonder whether a certain Diego Maradona will still be in the country at that time. What is going on with this Maradona story? This time last week, we were reporting that he walked out the door. Apparently he's not now. Where are we at?
He's back in a job. He's been given a one-year deal. And we reported on it as all the media worldwide did. It wasn't just a local story. Whenever Diego Maradona does something, it tends to travel, and it did. And Fujera were front and centre. He had walked away. 11 wins, 11 draws, no defeats in the domestic season. Unfortunately, finishing third into the playoffs, didn't quite get up automatically. He walked away, and then a few days later, the decision was made, wait a minute, we want to bring Diego back. So he's back, he signed a new deal, and yeah, it's great that we've got Diego Maradona kicking around, not just Fujera, kicking around Dubai as well, and you'll often see him. He's pottering around. You can't miss Diego Maradona, and it's great that he will continue to call the United Arab Emirates home.
Right, let's get back to last night's football, because we had a Friday night Premier League game.
Do we have to?
We have to, I'm afraid, because it was Manchester United again.
Oh, we've got a goal, Tom. Oh, my goodness, we've got a goal. Sorry to break away there. Oh, what a goal this is. This is an absolute belter, so it is. It's Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 0. Sorry to break away, Tom, here. We've got to eulogise about this. Gerdin Shaqiri, probably the only genuine, I don't want to say good player, very good player. He's played at Bayern Munich, he's played at Inter Milan, he is the Swiss Messi, is what he's nicknamed, or the Alpine Messi, I think is his exact nickname. It's taken a little deflection, which is, in fairness, has taken my enjoyment of it away. But the technique, though, to get the ball up, it's a free kick wide on the right-hand side, he gets the ball up and over the wall, it takes a little deflection, but it just bends away from Wayne Hennessy in the Crystal Palace goal, into the top corner, Shaqiri straight after, Paul Lambert on the touchline, their faces say it all. That could give Stoke a lifeline. I appreciate there's still a long way to go in this match, but 42 minutes on the clock, that is the first piece of real, genuine world-class quality we've seen all afternoon. It is Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 0, and it is the Alpine Messi who's on the score sheet.
What is Paul Lambert's outfit on the sideline? Are they hurting that bad in Stoke City where he has to be in a full blue jumpsuit with Bet365 right on the front of it?
It's his tracksuit. He's a tracksuit manager, Ross, is Paul Lambert. He does shun a nice suit and a nice tailored suit. I, on the other hand, would not, and I would most certainly be on the touchline if I was a manager wearing a nice three-piece suit. Not for Paul Lambert, though. He wants to get down and dirty, I guess, with the players. And he's done that, celebrating there with Gerdin Shaqiri. Fantastic goal, and that could be the lifeline that Stoke require.
Crucial goal as well. Oh, and when you look at all those down the bottom end of the table are playing a little later on as well, that is going to send some alarm signals to other teams if they can hold on and they can defend this lead for the remainder of the game. Keep an eye on that one for you. Let's go back to Manchester United. See, Chris McCarthy's doing everything he can to deflect from having this conversation about Man United. Look, Tor, you all know that Man United got beaten last night. Brighton securing their stature in the Premier League, so they'll be back in the Premier League. And it really was a sort of tale of two managers at the end of the game. The elation from Chris Hughton, and then, of course, dejection from Jose Mourinho. I just want to play the Mourinho thoughts after the game, and then we'll come back to the boys for their thoughts on that, because I think it pretty much paints a rather interesting picture. Jose.
Not good enough.
Why do you think that was?
Because the players that replaced Sathers, they didn't perform at a good level. And when individuals don't perform at a good level, it's difficult for the team to perform at a good level. So maybe now you understand why some players play more than others, and you don't ask all the time why A, B and C, they don't play more.
Are you disappointed, angry, surprised? Because bear in mind, there's cup final places up for grabs too.
I wouldn't say disappointed, because I know them, but I thought for some of them the possibility to start a game, the possibility to give reason to the ones that during the season they are always critic towards my choices. Why always Lukaku? You have the answer. Why always Lukaku? You know, why always this? Why always this? You have the answer. Why always this? So probably we are not as good individually as people think we are. And I keep saying, if we manage to finish second, is great. Is more than great if we manage to finish second. But now we need 4 points. And we must try to get them.
Biting comments there from the manager, who was not happy after Manchester United's performance last night, nor were the fans as well. Who's he? Didn't mention any names there other than Lukaku, of course, who is his go-to front man. But who's he pointing the finger at?
Two players, I think, there. Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford. The English press will clamour for Marcus to be given more time through the centre. Obviously, they want him through the centre. They want England to do well in tournaments moving forward. And Anthony Martial, they are the two he is referencing there. Romelu Lukaku is given a break, and I say given a rest, he's actually injured, in fairness. And that was an opportunity last night. And the demeanour of those two, Marcus and Anthony Martial, I've been privy to, again, rumours, conjecture. You speak to people in the game, and Marcus has changed from the young boy that broke through. That's what I've been told, reliably informed. And Anthony Martial, inconsistency with Anthony. He looks a little... He's languid, isn't he? He looks to be someone that right now isn't enjoying his football. That was another opportunity for them. And both Marcus and Anthony will have moments where you think, wow, but it's consistency for them. They're still young boys. And the question, Tom, that has to be asked, and I'll ask it now, is it's whether Jose is capable of getting those boys consistent. Has he got the capability as a manager, and as good as he's been, has he got the capability to make Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford consistent? If he doesn't, it's not him that's leaving the football club. He signed a new deal. I don't see Marcus leaving yet. Anthony Martial, though, I think the writing is on the wall for Anthony Martial. Gary Neville, in the post-match comments last night, said that he got the feeling from Jose's body language last night that enough was enough. There was one or two players given the final opportunity last night. They didn't produce it, and they could well leave the football club come the summer.
So what are we looking at? Martial gone. Luke Shaw, he's not going to be there much longer.
Luke Shaw's going to be gone. I don't see Mauron Fellaini signing that contract. I think he's pretty peeved, to put it bluntly, with the way that's been handled. I think Matteo Darmian could head off as well. There are a number of players who, and listen, we're not going to be crying over some of those departures, in all honesty. A few of those players were never good enough for that football club. Don't think I've kicked on. The problem, though, is, Tom, there's still some fans out there that aren't convinced that Jose Mourinho's the right man to spend another £500 million and bring in the type of footballer that he likes, because the type of footballer that he likes doesn't necessarily produce the kind of football that Manchester United fans feel the club should play and should adopt. Obviously, he'll turn to those and say, well, I win trophies. So you've got to pick which camp you're on, but it's not a happy camp right now. There are one or two, and it's up to Jose to weed them out, to sell them on, and restore balance and restore order to that dressing room, and hope next season that they can go on and challenge, not challenge City this year, the next season, the hope is that they go a lot closer to Manchester City at the top of the table.
Interesting times for Manchester United fans and Manchester United players alike. Let's contrast those downtrodden feelings and opinions from Jose Mourinho with his opposing number from yesterday, Chris Hughton, who, to be fair, has done a great job at Brighton. Keep them up.
He's done a phenomenal job. He did a great job at Newcastle when they went down to bring them straight back up. I thought he did an all right job at Norwich City, in fairness. And he's brought Brighton up and he's kept them in a division. That man is an absolute tremendous coach, a tremendous manager, was an assistant. Tom stepped up on his own right. He's done a great job, and more power to him for keeping Brighton and Hove Albion in the Premier League next season.
Let's hear from him after the game. Ecstatic scenes down there on the south coast after the victory for Brighton yesterday, which secures them in the Premier League for next year.
It's relief because for as much as even going into to today's game, I felt for our season's work so far that we've deserved to stay in this league, but we lose today, lose the next two games and the results go against us, which I know probably were against the odds but can happen, then it would have felt, it would have been a real feeling of sort of injustice, but that would have been the case. So relief that we've done it now, but also really proud of a group of players that have been in, you know, I can probably think of two games, Liverpool and Chelsea here, where, you know, we've been outclassed and so, but I think for most games we've been in it, and credit to this group of players.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
They've gone in for half-time in the Premier League. You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Brest, where the game is always on. With me, Tom Urquhart, I've got Chris McCarty alongside me, and Ross Crist as well. Chris, 1-0 at half-time.
It is 1-0 at half-time at the Bet365. Stoke City taking on Crystal Palace. I did say a little earlier, it was a little bit of a drab affair. You can feel the tension. Not that I can feel the tension all the way over here in Dubai, Tom, but you can see it on the pictures that it was a little bit of an insipid start to the game for Stoke. Of course, they need the victory in their quest to remain a Premier League side next season. The one piece of quality was provided by Gerdin Shaqiri, the Swiss Messi, the Alpine Messi as he's nicknamed. Beautiful free kick out on that right hand side. He just got it up and over the wall into the far corner. It was bending away all the time from Wayne Hennessey. It was that one piece of magic that has given Stoke hope. They are 45 minutes away, Tom, from what would be a huge 3 points in their battle to avoid the drop. If they do that, we've just been talking off air, a certain West Ham United get dragged back into it as well. And I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. You go to Leicester, do West Ham today. You've then got Manchester United on Thursday evening. They're now licking their wounds, having lost to Brighton. So there could be a potential.
Mate, it's written in the stars.
You think you're down?
I honestly do think we're down. I think the only thing that can save West Ham, and this is not me just being a morose West Ham fan, because it just comes naturally, is Huddersfield. And if Huddersfield lose their next two games, they could keep us up.
And they've got City, Chelsea and Arsenal.
Yeah.
They've
got three big games to do. But you look at it, I don't see us getting a point at Leicester today. I really don't. I think that's going to be, despite the fact that Leicester themselves are going through a rough patch at the moment, but I don't see that happening. Manchester United will have to bounce back from their performance last night. So we've got them on Thursday. And then guess who you've got after that? Everton at West Ham. Sam Allardyce coming back to Upton Park, where he's been sat from. David Moyes playing against his two former clubs in the last two games of the season. It's written in the stars.
Yes, Sam Allardyce would take great delight in sending West Ham down. I'm sure if Everton were to go there and get a result next Sunday and send West Ham down. I can't believe in actual fact. It's the end of the season next week.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Amazing. Plenty of football to be had before then, though, that's for sure. And plenty of sport to be had as well. Let's go stateside now. Ross, Chris, what you got for us?
Well, boys, let's go to the NFL. I know we're in the offseason, but last week was the draft. There was some big news coming out of the draft, some big players coming out from the college ranks, making it to the pro ranks. But the biggest story coming out of the NFL draft has got to be Shaquem Griffin from University of Central Florida. Shaquem Griffin comes out, and he gets drafted by the Seattle Seahawks, which in itself wouldn't be that big of a news, but Shaquem Griffin has one arm.
Yeah.
Shaquem Griffin came out, he has a prosthetic arm, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal talent, and he comes out of University of Central Florida, he was on that undefeated Scott Frost team, and now he comes out and he joins a Pete Carroll coach side, the Seattle Seahawks, where his twin brother is a starting cornerback out there, so he's going to be coming into a great situation. Throughout the whole entire draft process, everyone in the media wanted to be around this guy. He just lit up a room. He gives great interviews. He always has a great smile on his face, and now he's ready for the next challenge in the NFL.
I mean, it's a tremendous honor to be here, and it's been a great experience so far. Being able to meet new guys and being able to interact with the coaches, and it's everything that I thought about. You know, having the coaches, having that family vibe, and they're not here to get mad at you. They're here to coach you and make you a better player, and that's the exact vibe that we got today. And the competition has just been great, and you know, it's been a fun experience so far.
What's this last weekend like for getting drafted to know you're here and all that?
I mean, it's been a whirlwind, but now that's over with, and it's time for us to get to work and, you know, make sure I give high competition, make sure I get a chance for the coaches to see who I am, and make sure I can do my best and make sure I can make my players better and help anybody I can.
You hear it there, Shaquem Griffin going to the Seattle Seahawks. Chris mentioned off air. It is important to mention he is a phenomenal talent. This is not a charity case. Don't get this wrong. He's the fastest linebacker we've seen in the NFL Combine in about 15 years.
Wow.
So he's going to be chasing down people in the NFC West out there, and I think he's going to do well. I mean, he's coming into a situation where you have your twin brother also on the team, so you have that family element. A lot of rookies come in, see the big lights in the city, but his brother will be able to take him under his wing. He's already had a year there. Pete Carroll, a phenomenal players coach, so I really, really enjoy that pick there.
I don't mean to be curt or anything like that, but just put me in the picture. And I mean, do you not need two hands in order to be a linebacker?
So he has his arm up until probably about his wrist, yeah, on one of his hands. Then he has a fully functioning other hand.
Yeah.
And so he plays linebacker. So basically, the real way you form tackle guys when it comes to rugby is you put your arms around them and you drive through them. So you're not supposed to actually be grabbing the jerseys when you tackle. That's not how it works. So he's proven all the doubters wrong. His first 2 years at University of Central Florida, he couldn't even get on the field. Then Frost comes in, takes over as being head coach, and he finds a talent for him, finds a spot for him on the field, and Pete Carroll will figure out a way to utilize him. So it'll be really, really good for the Seattle Seahawks. Elsewhere, the number one overall pick coming from the University of Oklahoma, coming out of Norman, Oklahoma, Mr. Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield, undersized quarterback who's won a Heisman Trophy for the Boomer Sooners. He's going to come in and try to lead this new-look Cleveland Browns team. He is the 100th quarterback since 1999. I actually don't know that statistic. I think he's about quarterback number 28. So he's been going through... Cleveland Browns have been going through more quarterbacks than I can ever imagine, and he's coming into a bad Browns franchise, but they went out, they got some big players in free agency, they have some big wideouts there he can throw the ball to, and he's excited to get started with the new look Cleveland Browns.
So Baker, we've heard a lot about how your college walk-on, now the first pick in the draft. How do you manage the difference in the expectations that come with that?
For me, I can't think about the expectations on the outside. I have to set my own expectations, and I got to strive for those. And so, you know, within the organization, people I've talked to, I have to set them based on, you know, what they want. But then also, I got to push myself to another level.
What's your relationship like with Tyrod Taylor, and how do you expect that situation to work this summer?
You know, just met him a couple weeks ago, so, you know, it's not the deepest of relationship yet, but, you know, I can't wait to learn from him, you know, especially with him and a guy like Drew Stanton. They've been in the league, they've seen things that I haven't, and so just being able to learn from them without, you know, necessarily having to directly ask them questions, but just watch how they work, watch how they do certain things, their routines, and that's the type of stuff that I'm excited to learn from them.
How do you operate in your mind in terms of a timetable? You obviously, you want to play, but you recognize you have veterans in front of you. How does that work for you in your mind?
Kind of put myself in the best position to play, you know, that I know they're the starter. I know Tyrod's the starter, and I got veterans in front of me. So all I have to do is handle myself. I got to work and get better to where I can even the playing field, you know, because they've been in the league for a little bit. So I got to even the playing field as much as I can, whether that's about the playbook to where then it comes down to just playing, and I can just go compete. So for me, not necessarily a timetable on it. I just got to, you know, ASAP as soon as I can.
What do you expect will be the biggest challenge for you personally as you transition to the NFL?
I think just getting comfortable under center. You know, you talk about the responsibilities I had at the line of scrimmage at Oklahoma. I did it fully, but now it's calling it in the huddle. And then, you know, the verbiage is different. So just getting used to that and then drops from under center.
So much success last year at Oklahoma. You now join a team that's won one game in the last 2 years. How does that, what kind of presence is that in the building and in your mind, and how do you turn this around?
It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We got a new group. We got a new team. Some new coaches on the staff, a lot of new players. And so we're moving forward. This is a moving train, so we got the right guys in the locker room, and I'm looking forward to what we have.
Baker Mayfield saying it is a moving train. This show is a moving train. Benji's in my ear right now saying we have to do the news. But, guys, before we get to the news, I got to just tell you one thing really quickly. You guys don't even need to know who this person is, but you can just appreciate it in his voice. Jason Witten, future Hall of Famer, tight end for the Dallas Cowboys, played his whole entire career in Dallas. Yesterday, he came out and retired. His press conference was just phenomenal. You can feel it in his voice.
For the past 15 years, every practice, every film session, every notebook I filled, every ounce of sweat, I did so because of my love and drive for the game of football. And I tried my absolute best to be dependable. Dependable to my teammates, to my coaches, to my family, and to all those that were cheering us on. I don't know that I ever perfected that formula, but I do know I gave it everything I had. When my time as a Dallas Cowboy football player is over, I can only hope that the men and women in these hallways will say that I was a fine and decent man, try to do things the right way, and that I was dependable. There's an old saying in pro football, the circus doesn't stay in town forever. And when you're young, I think it takes on a meaning that when your opportunity comes, grab it. And as you get older, I think you realize there's a deeper meaning. No man knows when his time has come to walk away. And I'm no different.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Second half just got underway in the Premier League. Massive 45 minutes this for Stoke City fans, because Stoke are leading Crystal Palace by 1-0. Beautiful conditions over in the United Kingdom at the moment. Stoke, as the Bet365 has been, is covered in sunshine at the moment, and they will be hoping that their good fortune continues, because as it is, this result really does set something of a fire down at the bottom of the Premier League table. We are now going to turn our attention to all things boxing, and we have got something to look forward to, because it's Bell against Hay. It's Mac 2, and it has been called Repeat or Revenge.
Repeat or Revenge.
He can't outbox you! He's too small!
Hay knows he's in massive trouble!
Repeat or Revenge. Bellew Hay 2, May 5th.
Tonight. So watch it looking a little earlier on. There's all sorts of promos going on Sky Sports and others at the moment and things like that. But coverage of this card starts at 9 o'clock local time here, which is really good for us.
It's very, very good for us. So what that means...
6 p.m. back in the UK.
That the feature fight is, what, midnight-ish?
About midnight or so, wouldn't
9
it?
9 o'clock back home. Yeah, of course, only 3-hour time difference now. And Luke Campbell, he is fighting on that undercard as well. But the big one is the main event for a reason. Bellew against Hay. I've been watching this one from afar, and questionable, the little tete-a-tete that they had. I felt it was a little bit scripted, I think, honestly. I think it was both men trying to push the pay-per-views up. But there is no love lost between these two. David Hayes had his injury problems. He's looking for, well, revenge, as you heard there. Tony Bellew, I kind of keep changing my mind on this one. Early on, you fancy Hay. And Bellew's expecting Hay to come out fast and furious. Hay claims that he is now durable, that he could go the distance. If it does go the distance, I see Bellew. If we get an early stoppage, it'll come from Hay. And I'll sit on the fence with that.
Let's get thoughts then of one of the fighters, then we'll get the thoughts of Ross Crist on this one. Let's start with Tony Bellew, the defender. Of course, he knocked Hay out in the first of this battle between the two. Let's get his thoughts going into Mac 2.
Oh, nothing, just a little shove and push on me forehead. So he just wanted to get a bit closer, I think, and look too much into me soul. But as the nose touched my nose, we come close to kissing, and it ain't that kind of party, Fraser. You know, I can't have a man kissing me. So I just had to remove him from my space and just give him a little shove away. So, ambags, but ultimately, the real stuff comes Saturday night, mate. You know, when the mask comes off, the gloves go on. I just want Saturday to come.
You've talked about that mask that David, in your opinion, seems to be wearing to keep him trying, keep him calm, keep him feet on the ground, etc., and not bite on anything that you might be saying to him. Did the mask slip a little bit there, do you think?
He's trying to get under my skin, but I think what he fails to realise is I've never actually tried to get under his skin. I don't care if he loves me, if he hates me, it makes no difference, because we just punch each other in the face on Saturday night. So it doesn't matter if he loves me, detests me, whatever the emotions are, I've got to go in the ring and keep me cool and use me brain, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't know why he would want to get that close to me, and I don't think he fancies me, in all honesty. Why would you fancy a man more uglier than you? So, I thought, you know, it is what it is.
What did you make of him coming out with this idea of giving us some sort of an idea of what his plan is going to be? Go at you for 6 rounds and then step it up in the 7th?
He's not, that's a lie. can't do something now that you couldn't do when you were 25. So why is he going to... He's saying it to throw me off the scent. He's coming out for war from round one. He ain't coming out to have no boxing match because he ain't a better boxer than me.
Keen observer of the boxing game is Ross Crist alongside me. Interesting to get your thought. I think I'm with Chris on this one. It just seems to be a little bit scripted, this one. We had all the bad blood between the two in the lead up to the first fight. Then, of course, they were best of mates in the ring and showed huge respect to each other after that fight. Then we've got back to the worst enemies. Is this just boxing heavyweights at their best?
Let's not forget David Haye during the first fight training on a yacht outside that was docked outside Miami. He just sat on a yacht for a whole entire month before the entire fight. Maybe that's why his Achilles ruptured in the sixth round. But, yeah, I think these guys are kind of playing it up for the media. They know that ticket sales, pay-per-view buys are the ways to pad those bank accounts. So, of course, they're not going to come in and be high-fiving each other in these pressers. They had a phenomenal presser last week as well with Eddie Hearn and one other promoters going at one another. But it is just...
The other promoters are getting booed. Yeah, things like that by the crowd.
He's calling him a character from The Inbetweeners. But obviously these guys are kind of in the latter stages of their career. Hayes coming in at 37 years old. Bellew's 35 years old. So these guys are not going to be contending for any of the belts that Joshua Wilder have right now. But if you look at Haye, he actually only has three losses on his whole entire... His professional record. So if he can come in and actually say what he means to do, if he can say, oh, listen, I had a horrific injury, I snapped my Achilles, which is a horrible injury. You're basically one-legged then. If he can come in and knock him out, if he can knock out Bellew, then you can throw him in the mix of the top 10 heavyweights, and he can start getting some of those big fights again. I mean, there's... But if he comes in and he goes the whole entire distance against an undersized Tony Bellew, and Tony Bellew, again, can kind of beat him on points or something like that, I just think you can say goodbye to both these guys. Because I don't see Bellew moving on up the ranks of the heavyweight boxing realm, and I don't see Haye doing it with a second loss to him.
I was watching this presser yesterday, and the weigh-in, the presser and things like that. Look, who am I to comment on fitness and things like that? But Haye, to me, looked fitter.
He does.
Than he did for the last one.
Yeah.
And Bellew looked to me to be a little bit, I don't want to say overweight, because he's not, but he's a little
undercooked.
Bit, yeah, I just don't know. He didn't look as sharp as he has in the past.
But as we saw at Fight Night White Collar last night, looks can be deceiving.
Yeah, very much.
You know, you never...
Second height.
never judge a book by its cover, as the old saying goes. And, yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you. But that's been an accusation levelled at David Haye. It's the accusation that's levelled against Anthony Joshua. You'll hear that they're just bodybuilders. They look the part, but it's a completely different game once you get into that square circle. So looks can be deceiving. David Haye has had his injury problems, a raft of them, whether it's the Achilles, the shoulder issue. So he may look good.
Biceps.
Yeah, bicep as well. Let's see how durable he is in that ring. And I'm with you. Bellew looks as if he has been enjoying the high life after his...
He seemed to have a bit of a punch. I'm not going to say it to his face, obviously.
Absolutely not. He'd knock you out, probably. But from that point of view, absolutely. The looks of the two, you think David Haye is primed and ready to exact that revenge. But Tony Bellew is a durable fighter. And if it goes beyond the sixth round, I still fancy Bellew.
It's funny you mentioned his training, because I was actually following this fight closely the first time they got in the ring. And one thing Bellew did once a week, he'd go over to Everton Football Club, and he would train with their trainers, and he'd get into the gym, and Everton would allow him to do this because, you know, he's a big fan. He helps out the Liverpool community and everything like that. I don't know if he's been doing it this time. I couldn't find any news articles out there, anything like that. So maybe he is slacking a little bit on his training. He did look a little bit disheveled. Yeah, just not his normal self.
And what I would say about it, and maybe, again, I'm just putting it out there, maybe David Haye wins this evening, and then in 12 months' time they bank another 3-4 million in the trilogy, completing the trilogy. It's one apiece. I'm just putting it out there.
I think if Haye wins this one, he's going to be looking for a big name. He's going to be looking for a big name in heavyweight boxing. Maybe a good fight, an English fight, because Anthony Joshua might not fight him right then, would be Mr. Tyson Fury coming back.
We're going to hear from Tyson Fury in a few moments' time, but not before we've heard from the Haymaker himself. Let's get the thoughts of he ahead of the fight.
I think the pressure's got to him. I think the pressure has well and truly finally bubbled up here and got to him. He was trying to wind me up the whole time. He's been trying to wind me up when I was in Liverpool. Every interview he does, he's trying to say things to get under my skin, and he can't. And I think it's the fact that he knows You know, in 2 days' time, he stepped in the ring with me and he hasn't got a reaction at me. He tried to force it out by pushing me. You know, it's a weak move, but, you know, I half expected it anyway. I thought he was going to try and headbutt me at one stage.
He's talked about your mask, as he calls it. Yeah. Has your mask slipped at all here?
No, the mask is what it is. The mask is me trying not to lose my cool, trying to lose my rag. You know, I think it's well documented. I've got a bit of a short fuse from time to time. So he's just trying to ignite it. That's all he's trying to do. But I will not let him do that. You know, the fire will come on Saturday night. You know, but now I'm keeping under wraps. I'm keeping cool. I'm not losing any unnecessary energy, mental, physically, or spiritually. I'm just calm, cool. Saturday night, that's when I'm gonna take the. So I'm gonna light the fuse, and we the fireworks will begin.
He did get under your skin in the first fight, very much so. You lost your rag by your own admission.
The first fight. It wasn't actually in the fight. It was before the fight. He won that fight before the first bell rang. He got under my skin. He got me riled up. He got me arguing with him back and forth over irrelevant things. And come fight night, I wasn't thinking about tactics. I was just thinking about just punching him in the face and just being aggressive, where my style is about being slick, being a counter-puncher, you know, being an athlete. And I left all of that outside the ring last time. This time, I'm bringing all my tools into the ring. So when that first bell rings, you're going to see something very, very special.
We're talking about it, though, aren't we? We're talking about it. So they're doing their job.
Yeah, I guess they are, right? They're selling the fight. They're selling themselves. And, yeah, you're right to say that. I've got a WhatsApp group doing the rounds about where are you watching it this evening. So there will be a community that will stay up late this evening and be a little bleary-eyed in work tomorrow morning to stay up and watch it, because you buy into it, don't you? And even I'm guilty of it as well.
It's good for the heavyweight division, isn't it? Us as well.
Yeah, the best division right now. Yeah. You'd say the heavyweight division is the best division. I don't know if we've been able to say that the last 20 years, 15 years. So it is good for the division. I think it's better for the division if Mr. Hay wins, and if he wins in a knockout. I think it would be good to see him get thrown into those mix of Wilder, Joshua, Parker, Fury. I think if we can add one more name into that mix, it would be good. I don't see Bellew carrying the heavyweight division. I don't see Bellew winning this fight, then moving on and getting beating any of those names I just said. Whereas I think a healthy David Hay, a fit David Hay, with the way he punches, the way he moves in the ring, he could potentially knock out some of those guys.
Completely agree with you there. They are both cruiserweights. Bellew very much a cruiserweight. Hay has gone up to heavyweight division, but is naturally a cruiserweight. And I'm with Ross 100% that if David Hay does get the victory, and if it is by knockout, he puts himself into that conversation as well.
Just want to play this little piece of Ross fan. I like it. This is Tyson Fury, isn't he? Is he going to the fight? Do we know or not?
Well, who knows? Tyson Fury, he's been...
I don't think he knows himself,
been,
though.
He's been great these last couple of weeks, hasn't he? He's just been a journalist's dream, if you will. Anytime you get a couple minutes with Tyson Fury, you know you're going to get some headlines. But, well, Tyson Fury's not impressed with either of these fighters. Let's put it that way.
Last week, the big talking point in the heavyweight division was the £50 million offer to Anthony Joshua. It looks like they've declined it. Politics getting involved. What is your opinion on that? Was that a good move?
It's a lot of money. If it's a genuine offer, which I believe it is, then how much do they want? How greedy can one man be? £50 million ain't good enough? Good luck to him. I hope he gets £250.
Do you think that was for Joshua wanting more money than not wanting to fight Wilder?
I don't know what's going on. You know, we're prize fighters. We boxed for free once upon a time, so I'm sure it's not about the money.
Who wins if they did get into a ring?
Whoever lands first.
This weekend, David Hay, Tony Bellew, how's that fight play out?
No comment. Both a pair of bums.
Don't like either of them. Wasn't there an agreement for you to fight Tony Bellew? You shook on it?
No, no agreement. Tony Bellew's a bum, just like David Hay.
He just
doesn't mince his words. Does he? He's so good.
He was the one that turned up in the Batman outfit, wasn't he?
He was, yes. Yeah. To get under the skin of Vladimir Klitschko, and he did that, and he beat him. And it was a convincing performance. I know Anthony Joshua will have you believe otherwise, but I'm still of the belief, and a few people agree with me. Majority laugh at me when I say this. A fit and firing Tyson Fury is the best heavyweight in the world.
Those are some big words there. I mean, he's got to lose a bunch of weight and start fighting people again.
A fit and healthy Tyson Fury is the best heavyweight in the world. He's measured. He's got the ring craft. AJ is still learning on the job, as is Deontay. Deontay's wild by name, wilder by name, wild by nature. And the way that Tyson Fury deconstructed and went about his business against Vladimir Klitschko, if he can get back to that, and say what you want about the man, because let's be frank, he's not. You wouldn't invite him round for Sunday dinner, would you, Tyson Fury? You'd maybe invite him round to be the warm-up act beforehand, because he is pretty funny listening to. But fit and healthy Tyson Fury, with his mind on the task at hand, I think is the best in the world.
So let's look at what Tyson Fury needs to do to get to that place that Chris McCarty said. He's going to have a couple warm-up fights here in the next couple months against some bums, his quote-unquote words. I think he's going to fight some weaker guys in the division, maybe a Dominique Brazil, something like that. Then you'll start to see the big paydays come through for him in those big fights, in the big fight that everyone would want to see, not only in England, not only in the UK, not only across the whole entire world, would be against AJ. That would be a humongous,
yes,
big, big payday. He could sell out the whole entire O2, and it would just be phenomenal.
Sell Wembley out again, twice over probably for that fight. And I still think as well, and I know Eddie Hearn has said that AJ doesn't need to go over to America. Why would he? He's got Millennium Stadium and the Principality, whatever the Cardiff Stadium is now called. I always lose. I think it's Millennium or whatever it is, Principality. Wembley as well. Why does he need to go to Vegas? It is still the mecca of boxing, and I'd still like to see a big fight night. Anthony Joshua headlining a big fight, a heavyweight fight. It is the blue ribbon division of boxing. That is still what I want to see. But listening to Eddie Hearn, it's almost like he doesn't need to do that. Why sell out a 17,000 MGM when he can sell out 90,000 at Wembley?
Look, one thing you can guarantee, there's going to be drama at this fight a little later on. There's going to be plenty of pomp and circumstance. They will put on something of a show, that's for sure. They've been doing it already. As Ross Crist was saying there, the press conference was hilarious. The weigh-in yesterday had a little bit as well. In fact, the press conference was so hilarious that some bright spark out there has put together this little montage of some of the highlights of weigh-ins and the comical highlights of weigh-ins and boxing press conferences of recent years.
Ah, I feel good. There's a person who said history always repeats itself was wrong.
Fake news. Stop talking, Eddie. We can smell the silver spoon on your breath.
There's only one thing I can smell on your breath, and that's last night's activities.
It doesn't always repeat itself.
Bonjour, merci beaucoup.
I should say that at the end, right?
Ich bin Tyson Fury, the sexy meister from Great Britain.
Two things might repeat themselves. You lot screaming and shouting, but Tony Bellew playing games.
How's this suit look? It's a clagger. Somebody put this Haitian on permanent vacation.
I've got some terrible news for you.
David's gonna win.
You barge right the way. Ah, apples and pears, you know. It's not the Eddie Hearn show.
Don't worry about me.
But for the look on your face, for God's sake, man, you've got a hairband on.
Thank you, George.
It's not like a fighter's body.
If you wanna get in my head, you can get in my head, man. But be careful what you might find in there, boy. Just an empty space.
Play little games, all shout at me, well, that's good.
Let's hope we do see as well. It's nothing that beats a boxing press conference. I mean, it's part of it. It's part of the build-up, isn't it?
It's so good. I love when boxers get behind a microphone, and the promoters as well. You have to go back to the days of Mike Tyson in the ring getting interviewed by Jim Gray after he just knocked out his opponent. Jim goes, "How was your training, Mike Tyson?" "I broke my back." "You broke your back?" "My back is broken." And that was probably one of my favorite post-box interviews. But ever since then, they just keep getting better and better and better. And you look at what Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are able to do at some of their press conferences as well. But I like Dominic Brazil there. I'm going to make the Haitian go sleeping or something like that. It was quite, yeah, a permanent vacation. That was quite good. Wilder there.
You know what also helps? The journalists and the broadcasters around boxing just happen to be very good. There are some very, very, very talented individuals that front up and interview the guys inside the ring, and they're the ones that pull out the quotes. And I appreciate they've got the reams and reams of kind of little lines and little anecdotes they want to release, but it's the journalists that are there asking the proper questions, and the likes of Max Kellerman I'm a big fan of. And, you know, it's the boxing world right now is in an incredibly healthy place.
Looking forward to it. Coverage starts from 9 o'clock local time here in the UAE of the Bell Bellew, hey, Mac 2 fight night. There is a good undercard as well, so make sure you tune in nice and early. We reckon the main fight probably won't be before midnight, probably a bit later in fact.
Yeah, even that. I mean, you're looking at probably between midnight and 1 a.m. That would be 9 to 10 p.m. back in the UK.
Yeah, which is more realistic. Anyway, as if you needed any more sort of teasers, let's have one final little promo ahead of the fight.
David Hay fell apart because I made him fall apart. On December 17th, he will lose to the fat boy.
He beat me first time round. Plain and simple. My corner threw in the towel. He won the fight.
I know what my motivations are. They're for revenge.
I will not allow Bellew to hear the final bell.
Last time David said, if you are so confident, bet all your money on Tony Bellew. He did, mate. He won a fortune.
Bellew Hay will deliver drama a little later on today. Talking of drama, wow, Stoke City sent a bit of a message to the remainder of the games later on today. Chris McCarty?
Yeah, absolutely. Thus far, 66 minutes on the clock. They still lead by a goal to nil. That wonderful free kick from Jerdan Shaqiri, nigh on close to the half-time whistle in that opening half. And we're just seeing Peter Crouch, who was given a start, a rare start by Paul Lambert today. He's just trotting off now to a huge round of applause. The fans up on their feet. Paul Lambert giving him some words as well there as he goes off. Ramadan Sobhi, the Egyptian, is on in his place. So Paul Lambert just looking to stiffen up things. I think he'll put Emami Diouf will be now through the middle. Peter Crouch gone off. Ramadan Sobhi, he's gone out to the left wing as well. So as things stand, Stoke move up to 18th in the division on 33 points. That's level with Swansea and just two behind Huddersfield and West Ham. Crucially though, Tom, Stoke have played 37 of their allotted 38 matches. Next week, they go to Swansea.
Interesting. It's going to be a cracker as well. As Chris was mentioning there, we're actually going to focus on some of the other big games kicking off at 6 o'clock. Our feature game is going to be West Brom against Tottenham for all those. It's going to be called by Adam Bridge, who we're going to be talking to in the next few moments. But at the same time, Leicester entertain West Ham, who are in trouble down there at the moment. Bournemouth are entertaining Swansea. So two teams who will be keeping an eye on games and results. And in terms of those results, any time a goal goes in any of those games, you'll be able to hear it first.
Oh,
talking of goals.
No. Oh, what a horrible, horrible goal this is to lose. It is Stoke 1, Crystal
Come
Palace
on!
1, says the West Ham fan there. Paul Lambert, oh, look at the Stoke fans, almost close to tears. They're disconsolate. They look as if they're down. That goal could well have sent Stoke down. The one fan who must be in his 60s there, just close to tears. James McArthur it is. It's Ramadan Sobhi as well. It's the man who's just come on, who gives away possession. I say gives away possession. It is he that tries to play a pass. It ricochets clear. And then I think it's Wilfred Zaha who feeds the ball into James McArthur, the Scottish midfielder. He's been in wonderful form. He goes to go across goal. Eric Peters, the Stoke left-back, cannot sort out his feet in time. It ricochets off, and we're just watching a repeat of this now. Is it an own goal from Eric Peters? I'll keep an eye on this, but I'm pretty sure Eric Peters, the left-back of Stoke, is the last man to get a touch on it. The ball's fed into James McArthur. In fact, it's not. It's an actually beautiful finish, that, from James McArthur. On his weaker left foot, just guides the ball beautifully past Jack Butland. I did for 1 second think that Eric Peters had got a final touch. He didn't. That was a wonderful finish from an acute angle from James McArthur. 68 minutes on the clock. Peter Crouch is off. It's Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 1.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.